So how are you all doing today? It's been quite a week. Full of political drama and a very human exhaustion from holding up our corner of the world, I think. You all did speak your truth. You worked to save democracy with your participation at so many levels. I am so grateful to all who serve our common good and may have pulled this country and world back from the brink of totalitarianism for at least another day. Thank you for your service. I mean these words for all who serve the cause of democracy, our veterans, the great upwelling of social conscience that every single citizen is responsible for. I'm truly not sure that talking about Unitarian history and theology is the best idea today. But I am hoping that in these old stories, a deeper understanding of who we are and where we are today can be found. It is in the Transcendentalist movement of the 1800s that a shift away from solely Christian practice took place in the Unitarians of New England. It was a spiritual and ethical challenge to tradition that still reverberates in our movement today. Transcendentalism was countercultural, challenging the orthodoxy of the day, and it brought individual insight and experience to the center of our faith. Key to this shift was the idea of self-culture. This was a new practice that was an outgrowth of the liberal views of human nature that characterized Unitarianism's departure from Calvinism. More important than their disavowal of the Trinity was the Unitarians' belief in the ability of human beings to contribute to their own salvation. This optimism about human nature led them to believe that they could achieve salvation by living moral lives and participating in an ongoing process of regeneration of the spirit. William Ellery Channing said that the goal of the religious life was the culture or cultivation of one's inner spiritual nature. As Channing described it in his address on self-culture, to cultivate anything, be it a plant, an animal, a mind, is to make it grow. Growth and expansion is the end. Nothing admits culture but that which has a principle of life capable of being expanded. He, therefore, who does what he can to unfold all his powers of capacities, especially his nobler ones, so as to become a well-proportioned, vigorous, excellent, happy being, practices self-culture. Now, this culture he was describing was primarily horticultural in association, in contrast to the more narrowly psychological concept of the self that we probably have now here in the 21st century. Self was then essentially equated to one's spirit or soul. Very simply, self-culture translates into what we talk about today as spiritual growth. This self-culture or spiritual growth introduced a developmental or progressive view of the spiritual life. It replaced the notion of conversion as a single decisive event with that of religious growth as an ongoing process. Learning and self-discipline and the self-discipline of spiritual practice became a lifelong endeavor. This new discipline required that inward spiritual aspirations be made manifest in outward ethical behavior, so that all that introspection resulted in social action and the betterment of our society. Channing's emphasis on the spiritual capacity of the soul and the necessity of cultivating the germ of divinity within each individual had tremendous appeal to the Transcendentalists. Virtually all of them were engaged in one way or another with the pursuit of this self-culture. And it accounted for everything from methods of spiritual discipline to experiments with alternate lifestyles like communal living and efforts at social and religious reform. As Margaret Fuller noted in her memoirs, "Very early I knew that the only object in life was to grow. I was often false to this knowledge in idolatries of particular objects or impatient longings for happiness, but I have never lost sight of it, have always been controlled by it, and this first gift of love has never been superseded by a later love. So the gospel of self-culture was at the core of Emerson's preaching as a Unitarian minister. And even after he left the ministry, self-culture continued to be the central concern of his lectures and essays. Self-culture for the Transcendentalists was a natural development of the soul in response to which all that is required to remove all obstructions and let this natural force have free play. In his Divinity School address, he described the religious sentiment as a direct, intuitive grasp of ethical and spiritual laws, which can only be experienced at first hand. Every person possesses this sentiment, Emerson said. It represents the indwelling spirit in all men and women, and it is the universal essence of religion. The Transcendentalists may have differed among themselves regarding the relative substantiality of the physical world, but they were completely in agreement with the view that the heart of things was an ineffable spirit that animated all creation, a divine energy immanent in nature and human beings, providing a sense of meaning, purpose, and direction. This spirit was variously referred to as the oversoul, the universal mind or spirit, highest law, and God. Theodore Parker put it simply, the fullness of divine energy flows inexhaustibly into the crystal of the rock, the juices of the plant, the splendors of the stars, the life of the bee and the behemoth. There are no fixtures in nature, Emerson wrote. The universe is fluid and volatile. He insisted that nature was ecstatic. It was bursting with creative energy. There was an inexhaustible power in the universe which had a tendency to overwhelm and transform everything it encountered. The entire system of things gets represented in every particle. Every atom is a microcosm containing all the powers and laws of the macrocosm, the universe within itself. And finally, there was a correspondence between physical and moral laws. For the Transcendentalist, there was nothing in nature that did not have moral significance. Emerson wrote that the moral law lies at the center of nature and radiates to the circumference. It is the pith and marrow of every substance, every relation, and every process. All things which we deal preach to us. What is a farm but a mute gospel? The Transcendentalists brought this shocking and engaging new theology to the Unitarians of the 19th century, beginning in the 1820s, continuing through the Civil War. As part of this revolution, they suggested that we should also study what they called foreign religions, such as Hinduism and Buddhism, for insight. That God could be found just as well in nature as in church, and that truth dwelt as much within the human soul as in any religious text. They were individualists, iconoclasts, and they articulated the basis of what is now mainstream Unitarian Universalist theology. As the Reverend Dr. Barry Andrews writes, contemporary American spirituality is largely a product of Unitarianism and liberal religion. Beginning with the Transcendentalists, Unitarians offered an alternative to traditional notions of religious authority and organized religion. They gave currency to the notion of us being a spiritual seeker, characterized by spiritual eclecticism, mystical yearning, religious cosmopolitanism, and concern for social justice. They interpreted spirituality and mysticism in a new way, viewing religion's locus in the experience of the individual, as well as the ability to appreciate other faith traditions as spiritual resources. So we here today step into the same stream as the Transcendentalists when we value time for contemplation in nature, for reading, for creating beauty through poetry and art and music, and for deep conversation that reflects an inner pursuit of growth and greater understanding of the world around us. When we see the patterns in microcosm and macrocosm, when we embrace our interconnectedness with all that is. Ideally, this awareness brings us to our own direct experience and our own contemplations, not just the parroting of tradition or cultural norms. In their pursuit of self-culture and examining their own conscience and experience, they came to embrace anti-slavery, feminism, mental health and prison reform, educational reform, and other pressing social justice issues of their day. In our practice, in our own reflections, we should also be brought to addressing the injustices of our day. The process of embracing the divine spark and dignity of each and all naturally leads to deeper sympathies and greater compassion for those who are less free to become their own full selves. Social action is the inevitable outcome of a belief in a common human nature and the desire to integrate spiritual aspirations and moral behavior. This is why Transcendentalism, for all its emphasis on spirituality, led its adherents into the world more often than away from it. So I want to share with you a few of the voices of Transcendentalists, reflecting on the meaning they find in life as it is. After we listen to these very short readings, we're going to follow their practice and pay attention to our own inward springs in a few minutes of silence. We begin with Margaret Fuller. All around us lies what we neither understand nor use. Our capacities, our instincts for this, our present sphere are but half developed. Let us confine ourselves to that till the lesson be learned. Let us be completely natural before we trouble ourselves with the supernatural. I never see any of these things, but I long to get away and lie under a green tree and let the wind blow on me. There is marvel and charm enough in that for me. And Elizabeth Palmer Peabody, who was author, publisher, and founder of kindergarten in the United States, said this: "The little flower that opens in the meadows lives and dies in a season. But what agencies have concentrated themselves to produce it? So the human soul lives in the midst of heavenly help." And Henry David Thoreau: "But there is only necessary a moment's sanity and sound senses to teach us that there is a nature behind the ordinary, in which we have only some vague preemption, right and Western reserve as yet. We live on the outskirts of that region. Carved wood and floating boughs and sunset skies are all we know of it." You see, there is succor in the natural without need of the supernatural. Help is available. There is nature behind the ordinary that we do not yet fully understand. The Transcendentalists were rebels and innovators trying to find a more authentic way of being in their world. It came out of Unitarianism to form that new way. But what is so interesting is that their rebellion worked to change the very institutions they rejected. Their writing, thinking, and practice of a new way helped to redefine Unitarianism and Universalism for generations to come. Unitarians and eventually Universalists together have fully embraced religious pluralism. We are many and we are one. The spirituality these prophets point toward still calls us towards growth. When we serve human dignity and a mysterious beauty that surrounds us always, when we live in more than just the rational mind, but engage our senses and the intuitive, our entire selves, body, heart, and mind can discern the terrible and amazing truth of our freedom and responsibilities. When we choose to live in service to ideals rather than idols, when we take a lifelong path to spiritual growth and learning, when we respectfully open our minds and hearts to truth from all cultures and traditions, when we understand that our work and our growth are not done until we are done, we remember those who once opened these generous doors. We stand in the stream of their awakening to a liberating faith that revelation is still not sealed. In every age, this upwelling of spirit and human dignity must be found and nurtured again. The work is never done. We may call it something else and even forget those who passed the torch to us. But there is a flame of truth that still needs tending. This freedom to live without fear requires our constant defending. The law of love needs kindling and refining in every human life. And that is our work to do today. Bless all who take up this responsibility. And bless all who serve Spirit of Life.